Well, now, what about the future? I know you suggest that we're always behind ourselves in realizing what's going on.
We're always living a way ahead of our thinking, yes.
So, hi and welcome to the Pub Call, lucky number 13 for the week ending June 7th, 2009. The Pub Call is the netcast where we chat about the book publishing news of the week. Kat Meyer from Quartet Press is here with us. Also on the call is Richard Nash from Roundtable. The three topics for tonight, I guess, Amazon again and the social media hump the industry seemingly can't get over. And the third topic will maybe be the economic hump that I thought the industry was over, but then again, we've seen a big sign to the contrary come from the UK this week with the Penguin layoffs. So, to kick things off, let's talk about Amazon applying for patents to insert ads into books. TechCrunch and Slashdot, the two sources that I checked in for this, were kind of uncharacteristically shrill about this news, whereas I was thinking that it was no big deal. Richard, do you know anything about patents? Streaming ads with content seems like an old idea.
Well, you know, there was that company, Wowio, they came into existence in about early 06, and they were going to do sort of ad sponsors. Each book would be sponsored. And they started basically by guaranteeing publishers something like $1 a book per download, irrespective of the advertising revenue that they got, as a result of which there was a bunch of downloads. And, you know, we got some nice checks. And then we got a statement without a check. And then we got an announcement that the company had been bought. So clearly they were way overpaying the publishers and ran out of money. And they got bought by somebody who was doing something similar-ish in comics, but with a much more parsimonious deal, probably a deal that better reflected the economics. All of which is to say, you know, advertising is one way of making money. Is it the best way of making money? I don't know that we can say right now. No one objects to Google making money by putting ads alongside searches. The biggest issue in advertising is whether it influences the content. But in this instance, the content's already been created, so it's not going to influence its creation. So I'm not terribly concerned about it as far as I can tell right now. Maybe that's a lack of paranoid imagination on my part.
Kat, what did you make of this? I don't know if you looked at it or not.
Yeah, I did look at it. I had a similar reaction to you, Mark. I don't think it's that big a deal. I think as far as Amazon goes, it's kind of typical, and I'm surprised that anybody's surprised. I think there are a lot of publishers running and checking their Amazon contracts right now to see what this means in terms of, is their content going to be susceptible to having ads placed in it without, you know, against their will, without their say so. But it kind of is implied, all of the different loopholes that they've thrown into their contracts for everything else. You know, once they've signed you, you've kind of agreed to whatever they're going to do. And I'm not bothered by the ads. I think people will either accept them or they won't. And Amazon will go the way that the customer dictates. And I think people will accept them. I think a lot of people are raising their fists again right now, but in the end they'll acquiesce and they'll say, oh, well, at least, you know, this book costs $5 less than the one that doesn't have the ad, so I'll go ahead and get this book. And in the end, what bothers me the most is that Amazon again, is putting so much effort into doing something that does not make readers happy, that makes them richer. And it, you know, like, turn around and do something to really improve what an ebook is or what the Kindle does as far as the reader experience, and people will gladly pay you a premium for that.
That's a great point. Yeah, you've been hating on Amazon recently, and we keep on talking about them. But it's, in some of the stories, it came across as a Kindle play, and you know, my thinking, it's more of a book search kind of thing. And of course, well, you know, if you look at the patent date, one of the patents was filed in December 2007. So I think that the Google One came out in November 2007. So it's too close to call whether or not their lawyers finally got around to filing something that was in the works as the Kindle was in the works, or if it's totally unrelated. But yeah, it was the language in the patent seemingly was all about on demand content, mm-hmm. right? So
definitely
whether or not that meant Kindle or print wasn't outlined as far as I could tell. But you know, Adobe tried this with ads and PDFs a while back. If you mm-hmm. remember that, and they ended up abandoning it because, well, it was clickable ads really, and that wasn't really the right metaphor for that space. You know, if you're reading a PDF, you're not really in the mind to click on an ad in the way that you would be when you're searching for something, you know, actively engaging in the content in a search mode. So they gave that up, I think, last year. So like you say, maybe they'll just try it out, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, then it will just go away. But yeah, I was
the other issue with it is, will they find advertisers willing to pay an amount of money that makes it interesting to Amazon and the publisher?
Richard, you're assuming that they would be paying the publisher,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, there's like, been no mention of that. I don't know, and we need to get your wife in on this too to read the contracts.
Well, but
the frightening, the kind of
a lot of authors have contracts with publishers that prohibit the insertion of advertising by the publisher, and so I don't know what. I mean, to my mind, any revenue that would be generated. That's interesting. I mean, I was viewing this as another way of generating revenue that on some level would be shared, whether fairly or not, with the publisher. But having nothing of that at all, that strikes me as
there's two ways of thinking.
It might be a play that might work better with public domain stuff, maybe. I don't know.
Right, there's, yeah,
I guess
there's
we're
two
now
ways
getting of way off too far into speculative land, but the one other thing that I would throw out there is that the number of impressions that an ad in the average book would get is so few that it's hard to imagine many advertisers being willing to pay for it.
Agreed.
Unless they're sponsoring it in advance. But as we sort of said, these are sort of situations where the book's written and they want to put an ad in there. Well, you know, I mean, magazines with a circulation of under 100,000 have a dreadfully difficult time getting ads. So it's hard to imagine ads going into books like this. You know, it's the only, you know, it's sort of easier to imagine the sort of Google editions contextual advertising, but of course that's never generated very much money either.
Yeah, and Google, The Guardian had a story this week saying that the Department of Justice had officially expressed concern over the Google Book Search deal, so it looks like we're headed into antitrust land there. But of course, if Amazon wanted to put ads beside the search inside function on their website, then I wonder how many authors or publishers would balk then. In any case, we talk about Amazon every week, but we so rarely get to talk about, you know, social media and Twitter and stuff. So more accurately, I guess, you know, social media in a social networking sense. The Frankfurt Book people sent out a survey to 600 industry professionals asking if they used any form of social media to talk to each other. And I'm not sure if that includes connecting with authors or not, but 67%, so two-thirds, said that they were using one service or another to talk to their peers. But 40% of those respondents said that, quote, social media wasn't important to the book industry right now, unquote. And I was just like, what? But then, you know, what does that mean? Can we take that information seriously? Kat, is this a red herring, do you think?
Oh, it isn't, it isn't. I think that that's probably accurate. I believe that probably 40% of the people that they asked that in the industry did say that, because we are all actively engaged online, and I don't think that we are the norm in publishing and in a lot of industries. That people who do engage this actively online are kind of cutting edge. Not that I would ever refer to any of us as cutting edge, but we are ahead of the groove, so to speak. And I think that a lot of people don't probably even know what social media is that answered that survey. And when I talk to publishers, when I talk to marketing people, a lot of them are still completely mystified. Don't, you know, it's definitely not a matter of huge amounts of numbers make the difference in terms of social networking, if it's Twitter or if it's Facebook or blogging. It's not the impact of the numbers, it's the impact of the people who make up those numbers, that they are influential and that they talk to a lot of other people who aren't necessarily involved online or engaged online. And that's where the impact is made, not just because there are a lot of people online. And that said, interestingly, I was talking earlier with Laura Dawson, who just got a bunch of data from Bowker, and she shared with me her lovely graphs that she made. And basically what it said, you know, and you guys will see it in her newsletter, is there are very few people reading more than 5 hours a week, but the numbers of people who are online more than 5 hours a week are pretty high. Logically, you want to be where those people are, and you want to be talking to them about your books so that they'll spend some time reading your books and get offline. So I think that it's a red herring and it's not a red herring. I think that we all know that it's an incredibly powerful medium, and it's very influential with the kind of people who make decisions and write about and influence other people to read. So I think that a lot of people are going to start catching on pretty quickly, and that may be good or that may be bad. But right now, I don't think 40% saying they don't think it's important is very surprising.
Richard, you seem pretty appalled on reading about this.
My initial reaction was probably more appalled than I am having read a little bit more. You know, that's sometimes the way. But it's still appalled. I mean, and I sort of basically what Kat said is dead on. I did realize that what they were being asked to do is talk about intra-industry communication, people within publishing, within the publishing industries talking with one another, an agent in Germany talking to an editor in the United States, and so forth. But as
well, Kat, it was difficult to tell, right?
I'm sorry?
it was difficult to tell because they said...
Well, I realize that's a world that I know very well from having sold translation rights for many years. And it's I can sort of read between the lines, and that's definitely what they meant. Those are the people who go to Frankfurt. That's the nature of the business that is transacted at Frankfurt. It's a rights business. It's not a consumer business at Frankfurt. It's only a consumer business for the Germans. For everyone else, it's a transactional rights business. But what that nevertheless proves, as Kat will tell you, you can't understand social media if you don't participate in it. And what that says is that people just are not participating in it. And they're not participating in it in any kind of dynamic way. As a result of which, it is going to be an ignorant industry. I mean, or as a result of which, the ignorance of the industry will last even longer than it should. And, you know, I mean, it's, I didn't even have an email address until I was 24. So it's a sad state of affairs when I'm in the vanguard in a given industry.
and adding to that, I would say that those people in the industry that they're talking about who are engaged in social media have a huge advantage. And as long as they hold on to that advantage, they're able to, you know, find out about deals that their peers maybe will not find out about for six months. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, once everybody jumps on board, there isn't as much advantage, and it's not as
right.
It's not as cool to be online. So, can't wait.
Yeah, and of course, O'Reilly is partnering with the Frankfurt people to bring some of the TOC goodness there in October, right? Cassia is participating, I think.
And, yeah, I am too.
So, you know, this sounds like there is, you know. They're priming the pump a bit by asking these questions, I think, maybe. Yeah. So anyway, you know, Cassia said weeks ago that she would poke her eyes out if she went to another conference that had a panel about whether publishers should be blogging. And it looks like there's going to be another conference where they have a panel about whether or not. Anyway. Okay. So moving on from publishers kind of being ahead of the curve or not being ahead of the curve, to publishers being underwater. And you know, Penguin UK laid off 10% of their workforce 2 days ago on Monday. Now, my reading is that the industry has a stellar line of books due this fall. And I'm, you know, I've been enthusiastic about that, and I was kind of sensing that the worst was behind us. Are you guys where you are? You know, Richard, New York. Are you sensing that you know that the future's bright and the outlook is positive? Or
no?
Okay.
No, I mean, I think. Well, in New York, which is obviously dominated by corporate publishing. There is no sign that things are getting any better. Now that dovetails with a sort of an overall theory I have, which is that market share is going to shift from corporates to the independents. But a lot of it is going to go on in areas that aren't captured by the data. I don't think there is any industry-wide organization that will be capable of counting quartet sales. Quartets, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see you guys forking out the $400 to become members of the Association of American Publishers so that you can give them your monthly sales data. BookScan, as we know, is not capturing ebook sales. So basically, the inevitable success that you guys are going to be will not be captured in any sales data. But the decline of the corporate publishing print business will be captured. So industry-wise, things will look more dismal than they really are. But in terms of corporate publishing, things will look as dismal as they in fact are. They're not hiring. The word I'm hearing is that there's going to be more layoffs. The Perseus Books Group, which is one of the smallest of the corporate publishers slash the biggest of the independents, had a small round of layoffs, their first, about 10 days ago. On a corporate level, I think what we're seeing is the beginning of the end, not the complete end. I don't mean to be that hyperbolic, but the beginning of a shift, a really serious shift in the center of gravity.
I was listening to the business podcast this morning about the kind of the business is a NPR show about the recent rumblings in the movie industry, I guess.
I love that. I love that show.
Yeah, and they were saying
Claude Brodesser Ackner, the most ridiculous name in American radio, but it's a great show.
Well, they had two journalists on, and they were saying that kind of a new era is upon Hollywood, where, you know, for the past couple of years, you've had like foreign money, German money, Wall Street money backing a lot of films, and the studios were just kind of banking on distribution. They were just like skimming percentages off the distribution. And with that money gone, the corporate owners are now kind of marginalizing the big stars. And a talking point was the Sony Pictures backing out of the deal for Moneyball, which was the Soderbergh Brad Pitt vehicle for the Michael Lewis book. And they were saying that, you know, there's going to be no more large top line advances. And, you know, they're going to open movies that have understandable concepts with you know, casts that aren't necessarily big name stars. And, you know, if the economic slump continues, that I think we can kind of expect publishers to similarly start balking at big advances, and they will kind of double down. Well, you know, they may kind of rush to the head of the you know, the long tail, rush to the hits, but they could just as similarly, you know, get really risk adverse and you know, go back to, you know, bread and butter small publishing deals, right? Like, I don't know if you saw, there was a posting on Boing Boing this week about an author saying that we needed fewer better royalties and less advances. And, you know, is that the new normal? Is that, or are we, can we possibly go back to business as usual? Like, we're at this weird point, right? Like, where are we headed? I'm not sure. Anyway, I'd hope that the 100 Penguin employees, you know, are able to find jobs. Obviously, we wish them well, but let's move on to bookmarks for the week. Kat, did you have anything?
You know, I do, but gosh. Richard, you go first. I'm going to try and find mine.
Okay. Well, just one sec, let me...
Okay. Well,
I should get these open at the beginning of these.
I'm afraid. Yeah, I'm always afraid that it's going to shut down Twitter. I mean, it's going to shut down the.
Right. Exactly. So.
Okay. Well, I can go.
Hang on a sec. Well, yeah, you go ahead, Mark, because you're always prepared.
Yeah. Right. So I wanted to point to the Awful Library Books blog on WordPress.com. I don't know if you guys saw this. It just crossed my desk this morning. So Mary Kelly and Holly Hibner are two Michigan librarians who are encouraging other librarians to weed out crappy books from the public circulation. And then so they're posting these awful books on their blog to kind of make that point. And some of these are just like, oh my God, bad, right? So one of the best sites I've seen in a while, and I just kind of wanted to recommend people check that out. So
it's hilarious.
So that's the Awful Library Books blog on WordPress.com.
Cool. If you
search for Awful Library Books, it should come up straight away.
Well, mine is NickHarkaway.com, who wrote a post on his blog about ebooks and pricing. And basically, he is hilarious, too. Not as hilarious as bad library books, but another kind of hilarious. And he talks about DRM, and he talks about how free is not a good idea. That we need to actually pay for things in order for people to make a living. And that ebooks need to be better. And I, you know, the overriding theme and what I walked away with was, you know, publishers need to step up their game and do a better job at creating ebooks. And it's not going to be too hard for them to do that because ebooks right now are pretty lousy. But that you can actually charge a decent amount for a good ebook that is well produced and people won't balk at it. But yes, we should not be giving away things for free. And he's just—he's a good writer, so.
Yeah, and is he not John Le Carrier's son?
He is indeed.
Yeah, so he comes from kind of.
He's from good people.
Well, he's from good people, but he also probably went to college because books weren't free.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. So.
Okay. What I have here is, it's actually, to be candid, a wee bit dated, but sometimes I find things a little bit later than other folks do. It was from Ars Technica, and it was basically, you know, Ars Technica, and it was a report on about a month ago, June 10th. Basically, it starts by talking about, you know, young people's 4 to 14 year olds pickup of computing devices, which we sort of, you know, have all heard about and know. But what it basically said is that the kids are significantly influencing their parents' behavior. That basically parents' choice of communication style increasingly reflects what they need to do in order to communicate with their children. Hmm. And that parents learn to text, for example, in order to communicate with children. And what that is suggesting to me is that the rate of adoption of technology, I think especially handheld technology or some form of mobile technology, is, you know, there's an assumption that there's a certain group out there, a certain demographic that will never change. And what this suggests is that we are all going to change. That to assume that there is a given group that doesn't do blank, doesn't do social media, doesn't do reading online, doesn't do texting, is just simply not true. That we do not need to wait for these people to die out in order for there to be a complete or almost complete adoption of this stuff. That us oldsters are picking up on stuff faster than many suspect.
So, where can people find that?
Arstec. It's one of these URLs that's way too long to read out.
Do you just have a title for the post?
The title of the post is a dumb title: "Report: Kids' Use of Tech Growing Exponentially." I know it's kind of lame.
Right. It
ArsTechnica.com.
Cool. It just reminds, you know, it's just that kind of.
Right. It helps people Google.
Foucault's idea of you know, I was going to say Thomas Kuhn's idea of a paradigm shift, right? Where you can't see back past the horizon of when it was different.
Right. Yeah.
And we're kind of into a new paradigm now where, you know, in five years or less, it will, you know, it will be unimaginable that someone in their 50s wouldn't have a cell phone kind of thing.
Right.
Anyway, so that's about it for tonight. I guess, Richard, where can people find out more about you? And
rnash.com.
And Kat, what about you?
Quartetpress.com and or followthereader.wordpress.com.
Yeah, so you've been tearing it up over at Follow the Reader lately this week, right?
Well, no, but but we're trying. I'm trying. Charlotte's actually had some family issues, so I'm trying to take up the slack.
Right on. Okay, you can leave your feedback about tonight's conversation at pubcall.com or by sending an email to feedback@pubcall.com. On behalf of Cassia, Kat, and Richard, I'm Mark Bertils, and thanks for listening.